Privacy First has stripped you of all your crucial data about your customers, but you are sitting on a powerhouse of data, a secret data factory tucked away. And on this episode of The Groove, well, we're going to talk about how you can unlock that power and goodness to drive growth through retention. And here to tell us how to do it, well, I have to bring back the pros here. I welcome back Stacey Earl. And I also introduce my co-host, Jim Lorraine. Jim, and we all remember you as the man who dug down deep into some shocking retail data in an earlier episode. So obviously, you love to show what the data does and doesn't tell us.
I do very much. I'm blessed to work with a bunch of data scientists who have given me a whole new perspective on life. A confusing, complicated, yet wonderful perspective on life.
We are going to debate today's topic. As I said, our company sitting on a secret data factory. I have to say, Jim, I didn't get it on my own. I got the inspiration from talking with you. You came up with the idea of the secret data factory, a little bit Bond-esque here. We'll start with you. Are they sitting on a secret data factory?
Yes. And I just have to say, because I saw a Chris Walker post this morning, he was talking about a company who's spending $14 million on ads, and he gave them a quote of like $30,000 to set up some marketing automation to get data behind the ads. And they said, well, we can't afford that. So I think it's very, very telling. This is the thing. What our data has shown is about 95% of a business's customers are inactive, right? Like 2% are new, 5% are active, you know, but the rest, 93, 95% are active. You have data on all of them though. So while companies are spending like millions of dollars to put all their attention into ads and all this logic, they are absolutely sitting on a gigantically underutilized data factory.
Stacey, you are, for me, my go-to for CRM, because you have more than 15 years of experience as a retention growth marketer. You've been here before because you were at a health monitoring app. Now you're the head of CRM and user retention in one person. I got to congratulate CashKick for doing that. Usually they're apart. No, they're together in you. And CashKick is an online rewards platform. So the same question to you. Do you feel a little bit like a character in a Bond movie working away, toiling in your data factory? Or doesn't anyone realize it?
I think I'm more like Billy Bean from Moneyball, right? And the CRM is the undervalued asset. So yeah, less Bond, more Billy Bean. Yeah, we are sitting on a gold mine, and I implore every company to take advantage of that gold mine that they're sitting on.
I have to jump in there, though, and ask you both. I mean, it's kind of obvious that CRM should be the centerpiece. It's where all the customer data is, all the data about all the customers. Why does it sound so pathbreaking to be talking about unlocking that?
I was going to say, I actually kind of wanted to throw this to Stacey. I would love to get an idea. I think some people just don't know. I think the problem is CRM has been viewed as this, you know, you just send messages. You're the person who sends the emails, right? That's how it started. You send the emails to the people and then you tell me how much they click. So I would love, Stacey, if you could give us some depth into like what kind of data is sitting there at your fingertips that most companies don't realize you have beyond, you know, click-through rates.
I would say I used to think of CRM as marketing. But we actually sit under data and analytics at CashKick. And I've got to say, it's really appropriate. It keeps us very central in the company. We work with customer service who might be trying to detect fraud or figure out, you know, what browser a user was working with, you know, when they experienced that problem. We can work with product, you know, to say, here's what people are doing, or here's what people are responding to. And, you know, so we're kind of central in the whole thing. And then, of course, marketing, right? Whether that is, you know, marketing to existing customers or helping shape, like, where do we want to go? So sometimes the customers you have aren't the customers you want. And so, yeah, working with all those. So I love being central in the company and being able to work with every department out there.
I think this is already the biggest takeaway We got to top this one. We got to top that one. The biggest takeaway that I have so far is put your CRM under data. Like, I haven't heard that from anybody before, but that's huge.
Yeah. I have content writers who work for me, right, to help us with the content, because we are pushing out, you know, those messages to our existing customers, you know, but so we do have a content writer, and, you know, we have people who are specialists in that to help us, you know, create those ongoing user journeys and those campaigns. So I think you have to have a marketing mind, but I don't think you have to sit under marketing. And there's so much value for me in working with data analytics, because sometimes I need to ask a question and the data just isn't solely contained within my CRM. And so I have these wonderful counterparts. You know, Cole was my partner in crime last week in getting some data out of the system. And so it means that I'm not limited to just what's in my CRM as well. We can go dive further into existing data coming out of product. So it's a great place to sit under data and analytics.
Under data analytics and very, very close to product is what I'm hearing. And that's probably not the case, but that's probably what's evolving, because in addition to the day-to-day CRM, what I'm hearing is you're also managing the campaigns, maybe inputting to product.
Yeah. So we are managing all the day-to-day campaigns and journeys going out. We're not doing the performance marketing component. That's kind of a different compartment. Different area. User acquisition is different. So we truly are user retention.
I think most people think of the metrics, you know, clicks. That's what gets everyone's attention, CTRs, things like that. What's an example of some real stuff that you provide to product or even to the performance marketing team that helps improve them based on the generated data that you have generated?
We can take a look at not only just like customer demographics, right, but behavior of those customers. So one of the really interesting things we found, everybody wants to have a welcome campaign, right? And you should absolutely greet your customers on day one, you know, whether you do that 5 minutes after they become a new customer or 2 hours. And we were really puzzled by the data, because the data showed that we had really low open rates. And so we then went in and we said, well, let's look at the behavior of what they're doing. And our customers come in and they're busy trying things out. They're playing games or they're checking out new offers that we have. And they're not looking at their email or even a push notification. So that taught us, like, what are our customers doing on day one? Our customers are diving right into the product. And so that's input that we can give to product and let product know, right, that this is the behavior of our new customers coming in. And so maybe day one isn't the right time for an onboarding type of campaign. Maybe you need to wait for the second visit, you know, before you really, you know, like kind of say, let us tell you the secrets about our product, right? And teach you a little bit more. So behavior, I think that's the key to a CRM, is not just demographics, but behavior.
Just have to say, I wish a lot of people would think that through and do exactly that, because we've both been out there, all of the events, all the conferences, all the discussions, you know, where you start engagement, you start re-engagement, you start thinking about retention. The minute someone downloads the app, you have to like win them back and overwhelm them and delight them and all of this. And you're telling me, well, you know what? If you're looking at the behavior, you might just be like annoying people with this big, happy welcome. They don't need to be welcomed. That needs to be something different. And that's a huge myth I think you're busting right here. So I applaud that.
Well, I would ask the two of you, the last time you used a new app, did you actually read the welcome messages?
No, because
I mean, I don't. I ignore them. So Yeah. No, so I really try to pull from my own experience too, right? And think, you know, okay, as a marketer, I think I should be welcoming my new customers, but as a, you know, human being in the real world, am I paying attention to that stuff? No. If my product's not intuitive enough for me to know what to do in the product, email campaigns are not going to help that.
Yeah. It's a balance between I want that data and then also saying, well, the welcoming campaign, no, that's a fail. So how do you balance that? Because you do have to do that and you don't want to annoy or alienate in the process or just waste effort.
That is so challenging, right? Because how long do you let campaigns run? You need them to run long enough to get meaningful data. But at the same time, you want to be experimenting to see, well, can I do this better? Would it work better if I run this 2 hours later? Or does it work better switching up my messaging, you know? And so we are actually entering into a proof of concept pretty soon with AMP to use AMP to help us shape our messaging. So that we don't have to disrupt our campaigns, you know, to be able to, and yet we can still experiment with that messaging. So we're super excited about that. We think that's the next way to, forgive me, amp up our campaigns and our journeys. So very excited about that.
So there's a term going around, data activation, which as far as I know, as far as I've seen, just really means data accessibility. It means you can more easily get the data that you're looking for. And I think the hidden hypothesis behind that is that data will solve all the problems. That's been the problem. We don't have access to the data. We need the data. So data activation is going to solve the problem because now we have the data that we need. So I would love your opinion or thoughts on if that is the problem? Is that the fix to the problem? Or is there another problem lurking behind there?
I will say that probably is the most challenging thing about my job is really getting the events, getting the data in exactly the way I want them. And I have to work with a developer to do that. So I'm taking away from, you know, product development every time I need a developer to give me more data. That's one of my challenges. And then I would say the other one is the inability to have, there's never enough branching logic in the tools that use our CRM. I don't want binary choices. I want if then else choices. And those are pretty limited. It's a great buzzword. I haven't heard that before, but data activation is a huge challenge. Because if I don't have the right data, then when someone in the marketing department says, hey, can we talk to this specific group of users? And I have to go back and say, well, we're going to have to either add a new parameter, or we're going to have to add a new event in order to do that. And so, yeah, that's, it might put me 4 weeks down the road instead of being able to access that data myself.
Usually the data is like to answer a question. So how do people come up with those questions nowadays, and how can they find more valuable questions to ask?
My rule of thumb to make sure I'm asking the right questions is, what's your end goal? What are you really trying to accomplish here? And because sometimes people don't articulate that very well, right? They start with the questions in the middle. Can you do this? Could we do that? And so I like to come back to them and say, what are you really trying to accomplish? Oh, well, I really want to do this. And so to me, that's the best question I can ask is what's your end goal? And then work backwards from there to say, okay, what are some strategies that we could use to reach that end goal? I mean, we're all in the same world. We're users of apps. We're users of companies, and we're, you know, we experience others' marketing. So, so always putting yourself in the place, you know, of your user, like as a user, how do I feel about this? You know, did I like that campaign or did I find that offensive, you know, or funny, did that Solomon shoe company just blew me away the other day because they sent out an email actually asking for feedback from their users about their marketing campaigns. and it was a survey, and I was like, oh, well, that's kind of odd, you know, but it was funny. It was lighthearted. It was very engaging, you know, and I got to say, I don't take a lot of surveys, but Salomon Shoe Company blew me away with that one. So that's my inspiration. And I'm like, oh, what can I do with that now? So yeah, using your own experience, I think, as a consumer is very important.
I was going to say, is it even possible to fix it, Stacey? You're a CRM expert. I mean, can someone stop apps from asking me if I'm enjoying my app just in the middle of booking my flight, you know? And if I don't book it, I know I'm going to lose it. And it's like this little multi-second slot where I can actually get something done. It's like, are you ready to rate the app? It's like, hell no. In fact, if you ask me to rate
exactly.
It, I'm going to give you a horrible rating.
The worst ones are when they ask you to rate it when you haven't even gotten to use it yet. You're like, what?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know. And the fact that you just annoyed me with that question means you're going to get a bad score. So, yeah. I mean, one of the things that I, again, the being able to use events and behavior-driven data lets me, for instance, ask our members for a review after the seventh time they've done something, not the first time, right? So, so we started off like we were asking for reviews, right? We have a new app in the iOS store, and we wanted to boost reviews and we wanted to get customer feedback. So we started off asking them after the 10th time that they had successfully done something. And we said, okay, that's working pretty good. So let's back it down now to the 7th time and see, you know, because we don't want to ask people too early. You know, we want to know that they're having a good experience within the app before we ask them for a review. And so that's a great example of asking at the right time.
I would love to kind of tap on that a little bit, because I think a lot of times marketing says, just set up an A/B test. So, I mean, the example you gave, I think, is a beautiful one, right? To 7 days, let's try 10 days, 10 days work, and then 7 days, and then 5 days. I would love to understand the reality behind that. So timing is a relatively easy shift, but how long does it take to set that up? How long does it take to run that? What steps do you have to do to make sure it doesn't conflict? Because I think some people hear it and they're like, oh, I'll just do a quick A/B test. Is that a quick A/B test, or like what's really involved in that?
And it's really hard, because if you want a truly A/B test, you're only changing one parameter and that's it. Because if you change more than one parameter, you don't know which one made the difference. Well, the other challenge I would say is you need them to run long enough. And so I'm itching to change one right now. Because I've got a campaign and everything, I may be testing and everything is pretty much the same except for two things, right? Which again, that's my challenge. One is I have an image in one, I don't have an image in the other. And the other is I have a button in one and I don't have a button in the other. And it's the only change, and I can't figure out until I stop that campaign, is it the button or is it the image? And so, so the challenge of A/B testing is it has to be one single old thing that you're changing to really tell, and you have to let it run long enough.
Yeah. And probably at some point, if your audience is too small, like, is the test even worth setting up and running? I am curious. One thing that never seems to get talked about with A/B testing is how long the results last. So we assume that once we find the answer to our A/B test, it lasts forever. You know, and that's just the right answer until the end of time. So is there any method you've found or any practice that you put in place to kind of keep tabs on the results of your A/B tests to make sure that they're still valid?
You have to be monitoring like shifts in the industry as a whole, right? And what people, because people's expectations change. There was a time when welcome campaigns were new. Wow. I downloaded this app. Let me show you. They just sent me this welcome message here. Isn't that cool? Like, wow, I feel so valued, you know? And so that became the thing to do. Everyone sent the welcome campaigns out until we got to a point where now maybe people are overwhelmed by welcome campaigns. So I think looking at shifts in the industry and what's going on, what that might be the time to go back and A/B test again. Shift, you know, just because you're getting really great open rates. I would say the other thing would be continuous monitoring of those, right? So if I'm getting 50% open rates now and or view rates, depending on the language you like to use, 3 months have gone by and I'm slowly going down and I'm at 45% and now I'm at 40%. That's a great time to go back and look at everything again because something's not working the way it was.
Or something's growing stale. I mean, to your point, I'm still fascinated that you have such a team. You know, you've got your own content writers. That is pretty interesting to me because it's just not the notifications, it's the narrative. And I'm curious where you get the muse, how this all comes together, because I know of no other, I don't know, Jim, you know a lot of people in CRM as well. I don't know them that they work at notifications and the narrative.
No, I was thinking that it's usually brand, you know, usually brand covers, you know, the narrative, and then CRM just kind of has to figure out where to fit in. And what I've seen a lot operationally is CRM doesn't actually have room to spread their wings because they're being force fed. Like, we need to run this. This is on special this week, run this thing. So there isn't a lot of room for CRM to have independence to build their own unique things. The only thing I'll say really quick, because I think it's very interesting, from all of our data, we have found that you brought up the humorous campaign, you know, with Samson Shoot. The narratives that do the best, the messages that do the best, the things that do the best, resonate with the smallest group of people. So, and this is pretty much consistent across the board. So we worked with an educational learning app, for example, that talked about, you know, they had generic messages about helping your child learn and, you know, the importance of learning and generic message about learning. But they had some that talked about, like, the pandemic kept your kids home. And it mentioned the pandemic, which, like, you know, every once in a while that can be a little hot topic or whatever. But the engagement around that was huge, but for a smaller group. The engagement for learning, you know, in general was not as huge. It was respectable for a bigger group. But does that mean that I should send everybody stuff about the pandemic? Because some people are tired of hearing about it. You know, it happened. We're through it. That was always the challenge that I saw in the CRM side, is that if I send something really funny, like, some people love funny. Some people hate funny. Some people love serious. Some people hate serious. Some people love. So it's kind of, you know, my question, since you're so much on the data side, is like, how do you find those groups that appreciate those different tones so that, you know, Stacy and Peggy can still get the funny surveys that, you know, we want your feedback and are lighthearted. And then someone like me can just get a, hey, here's the product of the week, because that's all I really care about.
That really is the challenge of the day, isn't it? Right? Is making sure that you adapt that message to your customers, and demographics only get you so far, you know. Okay, great. You have pets, you know, but that really doesn't tell me what kind of message is going to appeal to you. So, we had a whole discussion the other day because, we were going to be doing some marketing using the kind of Karen meme, right, about someone who's very highly opinionated. And even within our organization, we were talking about, well, I find that really funny, but this person finds that really offensive. And, you know, do you move forward with that or not? You know, it's polarizing. It'll be really great to be able to adapt messaging specifically, you know, to user tastes, right? Like, what do you want? Do you want funny, or do you just want quick, down and dirty, give me the message and get out of my face?
But it has to be somewhere in the data, because you're seeing everything. So you're seeing behavior. So you might not see it, but you would see very, very strong indicators of what kind of person I am. You'll see indications of my persona.
Yes. But how do I capture that? How do I, right now, CRM is, it's mostly one way, right? It's mostly data coming in. And once I have that data, I don't have as much of an ability to like take that data and create new data out of it. That is actually one of the next goals, I think, right? Is for me to be able to shape that data. I'm a receptacle, but I want to be able to use that raw data that's coming in, combine it with behavior, and then do a calculation on it, right? And so I would love to see that my pet, here's my pet owner, and here's the funny message. And every time I send my pet owner this funny message, bingo, they like funny messages.
Yes, you cannot adapt the content yet, but you do have a system. You have like a little mini factory inside the data factory where you're somehow able to take content and just keep on making it relevant in your messaging. How are you approaching that?
Oh, goodness. Getting my content writers involved, right? And like, I just have the utmost respect. I mean, I can write content, right? I'm an okay content writer. I like to tell people that I am, I'm good enough at a lot of things, but I really love to tap into specialists who have that creativity and can take one message and write it five different ways. I'm so impressed by their ability to do that. And so I think we're really, I work a lot with those content writers, you know, to tap into their creativity and help us experiment with that messaging.
It's one thing that they're creative, but this is almost the same as it is with mobile ad creatives. You know, you have to give them the brief. The brief ultimately is shaped by the data. What does that look like? Because it's very different than with images. Images, you can sort of give it to AI. Messaging, ChatGPT, maybe Jim's more of an enthusiast than I am, but sort of close but no cigar.
I'll use that sometimes. I will say that I will use ChatGTP to inspire me sometimes. I'll say, what's another way to say this? Or what's a funnier way to say that? And I think it does help give me some ideas to then, you know, that I never use verbatim, you know, but it does give me some ideas that I can run with, you know, to like, oh, that's an approach I hadn't thought about, or that's a word that I wouldn't have used. That's the challenge, you know, is finding the right things to say to the right people at the right time. CRM and the data and the behavior is really critical for that. And I look forward to future innovations, right, of CRM. Obviously, we're not a huge company. We're not a Meta. I hope that we have more tools available to us that come out of those really big organizations.
One of the biggest hacks, if you want to call it a hack, that I've found is not asking GPT message for not asking GPT to write the message for you, but literally I'll ask it, why would somebody use, and I would put in the app name. Like, I directly put in whatever app name it is. If you're too small, put in your biggest competitor and then tell it, no pros, just give me 25 reasons. And it'll spit out 25 reasons why someone will use your app. So you can do it with Strava, you can do it with whoever. And what's enlightening is it doesn't just give you the things that you think about, which is, you know, run training and timing. It'll bring up the community. It'll bring up all these other things, the pulse oximeter, the whatever, you know, like your works with your watch and all this, which is really good for inspiration. The quick thing I'll say from our data that I found is that we did a whole study on this and found that message timing actually works better than content and is more effective than content. So you brought up dog owners, which made me think of this. We don't have a dog, but if you message my wife at the right time, you know, at night when she's unwinding, ready to go to bed, sitting on the couch, and you send her, you know, Wayfair sends her something about dog toys, that might trigger in her mind that, you know, we don't have a dog, but I'm interested in, you know, we do need clothes for the baby or something, and they'll click in. So if it gives you any peace around content or any anxiety around timing, I don't know, it's going to do one of the two. But we've found that actually timing is much more crucial than what's even in the message sometimes, which is pretty big finding.
Yeah, I am experimenting with some timing right now too. So yeah, totally. Like, is 1 o'clock in the afternoon the coffee break time the best? Or is 5 o'clock in the evening as everybody's getting home and unwinding?
And how does it change with back to school season and, you know, sports seasons and all these other summer versus winter versus fall versus spring versus, yeah, it's a Pandora's box, but it's a kind of fun one to crack.
So that's the fun side of your job. That's the experimental side. And I know you, Stacey, you love to tinker and to do stuff, but you also have, as Jim has called it, your unique pain as a CRM manager. What would you say is the most challenging thing about your job that you would want someone somewhere to fix? And who might that someone have to be?
Oh, getting data without a developer, for sure, you know, so that I don't have to go into the queue. So being able to just wave a magic wand, right, and be able to get new data in a different, or get data in a different way. I would say, wow, branching logic, right? Like, if this send this message, you know, then that, else do it this way instead, right? Because I don't want to have to run 500 campaigns. So I don't want to have to run a campaign that says, okay, Stacy is a dog owner who likes funny marketing, so therefore send her this message, versus Peggy, who doesn't have a pet, you know, and wants it serious and quick and to the point. That those are two different campaigns. I want an if then else, right? That says, if Stacy likes humor, if this person likes humor, send her this message. And if she opens it, then send her that message. Else, you know, and I want really complex branching logic. And, you know, I haven't seen that that exists. I also want the ability to use my raw data to do calculations within the data. So to be able to have more power within my CRM, not just be the holding tank for it, but to be able to build more data within it. So I think those are pain points for me.
Jim, from your perspective, is that far off? I'm just curious here, because it sounds like she's describing something that for us outside might sound like, oh yeah, that'll be done soon. But maybe it's more challenging than we're thinking here.
I think the struggle is that logic isn't hard. A genie grants you a wish and then you get it granted and you're like, this is not what I expected at all. And it's kind of like, I'm sure there's a movie, there's probably 1,000 movie references that I could drop, but none of them are coming to me right now. But I think we want the logic, and I get it. Like, I absolutely get it. But then what if we were given that logic? I could tell that Peggy is a dog owner who likes humor, and Stacy is a dog owner who doesn't like humor, but only on Tuesday afternoons and when it's a sunny day, unless it's a rainy day, and then I should send it. And then before long, it's really overwhelming. So sometimes I wonder if the tooling is almost maybe preserving our sanity more than we give it credit. But I think that's one of what we want is the ability to just reach the right person in a way that resonates with them, and to continue to deliver. And if it's funny messages, but then they have a tragedy in their family and funny isn't right, we want to be able to pivot on a dime and stop delivering the funny, or give them a break if they need a break, you know, instead of I just send 4 messages a day or something like that. So I think the wish for logic is, there's something, it's kind of, Stacey, I'm taking a page from your book of like, step back. Why do we want this? You know, like you were saying in the very beginning. So I think it exposes something with current tooling where they fall down. And Stacey, the testament to you is you're trying to take that on yourself, the failure of the tool, and say, you know, I need to do this all manually. And so what I hope is coming, what, you know, what we're doing, and what I hope is more prolific is not making Stacy have to put in ands and ors and ifs and elses, which is not worth your time, you know, way below your pay grade and your creativity level, and allow you to just dream up the persona and write to those personas and then have it delivered the way that makes sense, that allows you to get that data, like you said, and then continue to dream.
Well, sure. I mean, you can solve things with people, process, or technology, right? And right now I'm trying to solve it with people, but I really, what I want is technology to solve that for me. Maybe that's where, as AI matures and AI can start to write better messages, right? It's not there yet, but it's getting there. Then now you take the technology and you integrate it in with the AI written messages that says, oh, you know, we're sensing that you know, Susie's no longer responding to funny messages, you know, and we're going to shift. But maybe AI gets to write the message for you. Although that's a Pandora's box in itself, right?
That is.
So
I've seen a lot of people reluctant to use AI driven messages, like AI written messages. And it's funny because I often encourage people not to use the AI written message. To me, the writing of the message is your personality, you know, for better or worse, right? I've been flooded with Duolingo passive aggressive message examples. So for better or worse, but the writing of the message is what is like unique and shares your, you know, value proposition and your uniqueness and why people love like your app specifically versus your competitors is the way you talk. Look at food delivery. They're all, you know, to say they're all the same, they're similar. People, the messaging helps make them different. What we need is intelligent distribution is the problem more than creation. ChatGPT can write a billion messages, but what do you do with them? I think that's the big question. And that's what you were, you know, looking to solve with logic. That's where we need the tech to step up more than even writing the messages.
Full of really, really actionable points here. And we started out by talking about data, CRM data as being that hub. It has to be the hub in a company. And we've discussed that. And the integration of that never stops. Yet most companies aren't as far along as you are over at CashKick, Stacey. They're not set up to do this. And in many cases, product team, which is what you're trying to also support here, they're completely in the dark. So let's give you a platform here to enlighten them. We said it's a data factory. We said it's an important data hub. It needs to be integrated, but they are in the dark. Enlighten them.
Yeah, they think it's a one and done, right? Okay, we set aside two sprints to do integration of the CRM and we're done. And I've tried to educate people and say, you're never done. As the product grows, as you introduce new functions, then those functions should be generating new events, new data for me. So it's never done. It needs to be part of the thought process to every time you create a new function, what data from that new functionality do I need to be sending to the CRM? So I've recently done a whole series of demos to every department, right? I did it to the development team. I did it to the product team. I've done to customer service because I really want them to understand that this is a tool that serves all of every department in the company. And I want them to understand as much as they can without being in it every single day, what's available, what can we do, what would be relevant for them? You know, how could customer service use it to detect fraud? Those are, I think, the two things that I do. Is a lot of education and awareness, you know, so that then it goes into people's thought process. We want to be the hub. We don't want to be the afterthought.
That's smart. That's smart and so proactive to do the roadshow. That's brilliant.
So I'm going to wrap it up with some rapid fire. And Jim, why don't you come in here and we split them up between us and you have to give short answers to the point. Be your, you know, get in touch with your inner grit. Okay. A rule of thumb to ask the right questions.
What's the end goal? That's it. What's the end goal?
And what's the most brutal advice you've ever had to give or take?
Perfect is the enemy of done.
That's a good lesson. I can empathize with that one. You touched upon this, but let's just get it right at the core here. What doesn't CRM do? Or let you do rather that you're determined to do, even if you have to duct tape it together yourself.
I really want the ability to, create data from my data without developers, right? Without that cost, you know, to be able to just do that ourselves.
And what is the biggest misconception about CRM?
I think the biggest misconception is that we're just for marketing. You know, that's that we're just a marketing tool, you know, and But I think that the CRM really has the power to shape product, to solve customer service issues, to generate revenue. We're not just a marketing tool.
Your uncensored message to anyone in the industry, anyone anywhere, you can give them praise, you can vent. It is literally all yours and no limits, Stacey. What would you say?
I will always, I think, have to give a shout out to people and some women in particular, I would say, that in the past gave me chances when I was, untested. You know, there were times throughout my career when I've been laid off and people looked for what I could do, looked for, what my, not just my qualifications, right, but what my personality was and the way I thought. And so really, thank you to all the people out there who, didn't just pigeonhole me in a box. So pigeonhole me in a box. I think I mixed my metaphors, but yeah. So that's my thank you for the day, my gratitude, my message of gratitude.
Well, I have to say, Stacey, since we first met, and then we do it every time, we've got Mal again coming. In fact, we've got Mal and Jim will be at Mal. We will all be at Mal in Las Vegas. I am looking forward to and hanging out with you because I have to say, Stacey, you are someone that no one can pigeonhole. You really do define the boundaries, and it's such a pleasure to have you back, and I mean that. And Jim, you are the man on, you're the man on the barracks almost. You're fighting your battle to bring clarity to this, to help us understand data. I applaud you, and I'm looking forward to another episode with you again, Jim and Stacey. Have a great one. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.